This is Coda Radio, episode 567 for April 23rd, 2024. Hello, friend, and welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show. It's taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business of software development and the world of technology. My name is Chris, and over there pumping iron before the show, getting all pumped up, it's our host, Mr. Dominic. Hello, Mike.
I will break you.
All right. I actually think that's probably true. Probably unbroken. Especially if you're working at Google. I don't know. We got a packed show today, but I just had to make mention that Google seems to have pulled a Coinbase and gone mission-focused all of a sudden. And this is a really big deal if you've ever read Into the Plex, which is a book that I will link in the show notes. I've recommended it half a dozen times on the show, but it really captures the early days of Google and their thinking and how they wanted a university-like atmosphere for their engineers. This is a quote from Eric Schmidt in the book. Quote, "A lot of Google is organized around the fact that people still think they're in college when they work here." Right? So now for Google to come out and say, all right, we're firing these 28 employees who participated in these protests at our office. We're going to keep the contract that they were upset about. And then to release a public memo that says, these are the expectations. This is a place of business. There will be no disruption that impacts business. This is not a place to fight over issues and debate politics, is a quote from Google. They say they want to be an objective and trusted provider of information. It's a pretty big change. And it's got to be in part influenced by the reaction to the Gemini results and all of this, right? It's Google, I think, is like maybe actually understanding the level of trust crisis they're facing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd also add that, you know, we had a couple years ago, the DoD contracts and the immigration service contract that got a lot of flack from employees. That I think kind of no matter which side of the aisle or which side of the, you know, the spectrum you're on here, it made Google's management look kind of weak, right? Because they didn't really condemn the protests or be like, no, just get back to work. They kind of allowed it, but then like didn't. It was this crazy thing. Also, there's some economic realities that the money printer is not going burr right now. In fact, I got a text today from a young guy who, you know, he's looking for a job in tech. And the jobs are just much less plentiful.
Are your implication being that Google is looking for reasons to let people go?
My implication is it's the market working, right?
When money is tighter, like these things matter more, I guess.
Right. Google caliber developers, right? Like Fang caliber developers are not in, don't get me wrong, they're still in like the most privileged position in the economy, but they don't have the same, I don't even know what to call it, right? They can't throw a temper tantrum anymore. It's a job like any other job, and management. And I would almost be, you know, I would love to be a fly on the wall, because I'd imagine there's some folks at like the manager level and director level there who are kind of like just tired of the babysitting aspect of all this bull. And I honestly think their statement was perfect. This is a place of business. You know, keep your politics at home. I totally disagree with the bring your full self to work stuff. I don't think it's appropriate. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of companies, Star, who would love that Israeli contract or the DoD contract or the ICE contract. And I got to tell you, sometimes I read these complaints from like very privileged Silicon Valley engineers, and I'm like, you have no idea how hard it can be to make a living. So
yeah, I don't know if I don't really have a position on the bring your full self to work thing, but it does seem like Google was maybe the grandest scale experiment we may have had of it.
Right.
And this does seem like a huge shift, one that isn't really getting much attention for the size of it, especially if, like I say, you understand kind of the early days of Google and what their goals were around creating this type of culture and workplace.
Yeah, it's a huge shift for Google to fire for this kind of protest, right?
But don't you think it was that very dynamic and culture that gave Google this ability to just leapfrog what Microsoft and the other incumbents were doing at the time?
No, I don't.
I wonder if it's a model, depending on the goals of the company. I propose to you, sir, that it's a model that maybe works at like 3,000 employees, but it's one that falls apart at 20,000 plus employees.
So, okay. So two things I kind of think here, right? One, I think Google's ascendancy back in, let's say the aughts, was mostly Microsoft being a little incompetent and missing the mobile revolution. But also they had a great big boot on their neck from the Justice Department, right? Microsoft culturally became afraid of violating their consent decree or having to, you know, go back to court. So it obviously affects a firm if they think they're under a lot of legal scrutiny. Hell, I think we have a story later in the doc about emulation on iOS, and that would not be happening without legal scrutiny, right, or regulatory scrutiny for Apple. So I think in a lot of ways, it's funny you mentioned Microsoft to me, because I feel like Google is becoming the Microsoft of the aughts.
I agree.
Where, yeah, these departments are kind of fighting each other. There's a lot of management now, it sounds like. I do think that, you know, it's a great, the analogy to a college campus is interesting. Well, can you be a college campus that's international and has, you know, I don't even know how many employees Google has, but leave all these huge campuses. And what do you do when your quote unquote students, right, your employees disagree on something? In the past, they've, I think, put up with too much bullshit, and they fire people who had the wrong, you know, opinions that they didn't care for. And now they're realizing, like, this is a business. And I, you know, you wouldn't pull the shit at Raytheon, right? I'm kind of, I'm just saying, like, it's Google, for all it tries to be, you know, happy, fun, primary colors, Montessori school, is a very serious government and military contractor.
All right, I got the numbers for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Alphabet, as of December, has 182,502 employees.
That's a small nation.
Which is a decrease, actually, from last year, as we've talked about before. And, of course, that number's been decreased a bit since December, when they had to disclose it last. But, you know, and so does the Google subsidiary have a lot less employees? Yes, but it's still in the tens of thousands. And I could totally see this just college campus model kind of falling apart, because what we're watching the entire tech industry do, for better or for worse, we're watching them pivot on this amazing, like, for all these large companies like Microsoft to pivot to AI in this amazing amount of time. Very short amount of time, we went from nobody's talking about AI and ChatGPT style AIs to it's like getting baked into everything now. And Google has had a hard time actually keeping up, even though they were essentially ahead of everybody for the longest time in this industry. And you have to figure that there's going to be moments like that in this industry where your company has to be nimble. And that college campus style at that scale really is just the exact opposite of being nimble. And maybe they're having some sort of existential crisis internally realizing that and trying to finally right the ship.
Well, and there was just too much damn free money. I mean, you know, these cuts seem so dramatic. This is like my, I don't know, HR conspiracy bacon. Because the hiring was just excessive. It was.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I know of startups down here that a metric they were using is headcount. But like, that makes no sense. If you're an investor, you want your startup running lean. You don't want them saying, and we hired 10 more people. You get a lot of bloat. I guess I don't fault Google for this. I find it weird to say that Google and Apple and Microsoft and all these kind of big tech companies should somehow have to pretend that they're not businesses when they're some of the most successful businesses in the world, right? Like they're corporations. I'll use another military contractor reference. LG Harris would totally fire you for this. And frankly, all the stuff around the ICE contract, those folks would have been fired. Like if you try to organize against your employer, there's a good chance you're going to get fired, especially if it's not, you know, legal union organizing. You can't just say like, my employer is Satan and expect us to, frankly, I wouldn't even want to employ someone who did like political crap that I even agreed with. And I know I sound a lot like Galloway because he's actually right. It's good. He's been on a bad streak recently because it just causes trouble. It just causes trouble. There's no point. I don't know. I have no sympathy for the workers on this one. I mean, Chris, if somebody walked into your booth right now and was like, hey, Fisher, go f*** yourself up, you'd probably fire them. Like, I don't know what to say. I mean, maybe if, like, if you're having a bad time, you might look the other way or whatever. But to tell you to turn down, like, if we got a giant advertising contract, to turn it down because you know, you have strong feelings about it, I don't see that being viable. So,
Yeah, I'm just thinking these debates are happening right now in the open source community. You know, projects are finally getting revenue and sponsorships, but...
And I craftily avoided them.
And people in the community don't like those sponsorships.
I know. God forbid the maintainers can buy themselves a Big Mac.
So Meta has debuted Llama 3, like we teased last week, and it's kind of on fire.
It's en fuego.
I think we called it. We called it. 2024 is going to be the year of small models, because within hours of Llama 3 hitting the internet, they had the 8 billion instruction model up and running on an iPhone on device with a full 8,000 context with 8 gigabyte RAM devices. So you can get it running theoretically on 6 gigabyte RAM or less devices, but you're going to have a worse time with it. But the guy actually really got it shipping. It's called Private LLM. You can find it at privatellm.app. And it is, amongst others, it's a Llama 3 local AI chatbot for iOS and macOS. Jeez. And it keeps everything on device safe and private. But the cool thing is, and I haven't played around with it very much, the macOS version ties in with macOS services.
Oh, that's good.
And you can like highlight text, right-click on the text anywhere in a Mac app, and say, rephrase this or shorten this, which is I find actually the most useful, shorten this with Private LLM. And it does it all on device. You can choose the language model you want it to use.
That's beautiful.
It's really good.
Wait, can I do that on my iPad?
Yeah, they got it for the iPad too.
You can, but can you actually tie in with the... You can't, right?
No, sure. Not in the UI like you can with Apple services. But you can run the app. You could, you know, tab over, paste it in. But so this is using, amongst others, it's using Llama 3 already. Later that day too, they had a demo of somebody running on a Raspberry Pi 5. This is really great to see this. And then this morning, as we're going live, Microsoft launched their Phi 3, which is their mini LLM, which had Phi 2 in December. And they were trying to get to about Llama 2 levels of functionality. And it seems Phi 3 is about Llama 3 levels. Microsoft says it performs better than the previous version and can provide responses close to how a model 10 times bigger typically does. And it's small enough to be deployed on a phone. They used synthetic data pipelines to train it, and they had a curriculum similar to how a child learns from bedtime stories with simpler words and sentence structures that talk about larger topics. Here's a quote. "There aren't enough children books out there, so we took a list of more than 3,000 words and asked an LLM to make children's books, and then we teach that to Phi." So I guess that's what they mean by synthetic data.
I just like the phrase synthetic data pipes. It feels very post-apocalyptic, you know.
I'm a little skeptical because it feels like there's a lot of room for slight hallucinations to get into the training work that then trains this thing. Because I've been playing around with Llama 3. I've not played around with Phi 3, but I've been playing around with Llama 3, and I've gotten wild results. Like totally off the mark, crazy ass hallucinations, or even simple common ones, like I'm having it summarize transcriptions or show notes, and it will hallucinate speaker names, or it will hallucinate things that we talked about in the show, and it'll say one company said something, and it'll completely get the context wrong, the company's wrong. It'll even make up events that have happened sometimes that haven't happened, and claim that those were in the show notes. So it's really...
So it's like every YouTube commenter.
I don't know, man, but to my personal testing, the smaller models seem to be a lot more lunatic.
They seem a lot more sane. I actually, it's funny you mentioned this because I have a little surprise for the second show for you today.
Okay.
But I brought it to ChatGPT, and I can't tell you what it is yet because I want to torture you and get people to listen to the second show. But I got it from saying it was started off as, "Progress is great. We're going to fix all the problems for humanity, and I'm going to help to you. You're correct. Humanity is likely doomed." So,
oh, wonderful.
Yes.
All right. So tune in
and
next week,
I used
everybody.
Some of our favorite sci-fi shows to make my cases, which I'll give one big hint. The level of Babylon 5 knowledge that ChatGPT has is surprising. It was like right there. Like, we got into a long debate on the shadows and the Vorlons and the techno mages. I will say ChatGPT's love of the shadows is maybe un po' concerning. Yeah.
All right. So next week.
Remember, animals come to resemble their pets. Maybe AIs come to resemble their CEOs un po'?
Yeah, it's true.
Yes.
It's true.
Yes.
That's why Levi's been putting on weight. So LLM Studio came in clutch again. I don't know if you guys remember, but we mentioned on the show before, LLMstudio.ai. It launched with Llama 3 over the weekend, I think, or a little bit earlier. It's been choice. And they also have a preview version now for some AMD systems to get acceleration there. So LLMstudio.ai if you want to play around with Llama 3. Maybe your results will vary. I don't know, though. I just think Microsoft is, think about what they're doing right now is they're taking like access to ChatGPT-4. They're having it create phrases and stories. And then they're feeding that into their large language model, which is smaller because it's using like essentially distilled GPT-4 output. And then they're shipping that. And it wouldn't be possible without the GPT distilled stuff. You know what I mean? Like, the whole thing's very strange and incestuous in a way, and seems...
Well, I wouldn't call it incest. I'd say they have embraced GPT. Uh-huh. They are now extending it. Oh, wait. What's the next step?
Oh.
Oh, well, it'll be fine.
Coder.show/membership. Coder is ad-free right now, and our members are what keep us on the air. And we had 6 new subscribers since the last time we gathered together. Shout out to Joshua, James L., James T., Greg, Andrew, and Patrick. You are our 6 new members. Thank you very much. We really appreciate that. And there is a bootleg promo code going around the internet right now, somehow. Use the promo code Darth Jar Jar, and it'll take $1 off your membership for a year. And you contribute to the show directly. You also get an ad-free version of the show. New members can use that. Existing members... if you're reactivating an expired subscription, there are 5 redemptions left, I am told, and then I will have squashed this rebellion. I do appreciate everybody who signs up. It does mean a lot and keeps us going. So go to coder.show/membership to sign up and use the promo code Darth Jar Jar. And you can also boost in and support each individual production with your individual value, whatever you think it's worth. Newpodcastapps.com to get a new podcast app like Fountain, Castomatic, or podverse.fm, and you could boost in with a message, and we'll feature it in an upcoming episode. A couple of different ways to support, and they're very much appreciated. That's coder.show/membership for the membership program, or newpodcastapps.com. Not nude, new. Although I think nude actually, you could try it. I think it works. Nudepodcastapps.com. So Meta has taken a jiu-jitsu move and released their, I guess it's called Horizon OS, which is their OS for the Quest headsets to third parties. And they say beyond, future headsets will be able to use their OS. Yes, it's built on top of Android, but greatly optimized for the world of VR and mixed reality, the Zuck says. And Asus has announced they're going to make a performance-based VR gaming headset under the Republic of Gamers brand. And Lenovo says they're also planning to make a VR device compatible with Meta Horizon OS. Theirs is going to be, I thought the whole thing was really funny. It's going to be aimed at learning, entertainment, and work. It's a pretty big range, but okay. What do you think of this, Horizon OS getting opened up to third-party devices?
I think there's a lot of Microsoft love over at Facebook, right? If you go back to the early days of the founding, Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Love Fest. This is, I think, a great idea. I am so happy I did not buy a Meta 3 yet, because I will probably take a swing on, first of all, Republic of Gamers is just a shitty brand name, but I will guess I will be a customer, maybe.
Yeah, I hate it too.
I hate that. I just wish they'd called it something better. With that said, you gotta be smarting over on Cupertino. Seeing this, like, you built this admittedly super, like, I did the demo, super technologically advanced VR AR headset called the Vision Pro. And I don't, Chris, right before you and I got on the air, like 10 minutes before, Gizmodo posted an article saying that most Apple stores are selling no more than like one to three Vision Pros a week.
Oh, ouch.
Granted, you know, Republic of Gamers, that's Asus. They could screw it up, right? But then you have Lenovo coming in. They usually do pretty solid work. I have a feeling what are they calling it? Horizon OS? Yeah, those bastards. I started a magazine in college called Horizon that ran for years. I'm going to sue them for copyright.
There you go.
I think they're going to eat Apple's lunch. I mean, what do you want to do? Right, gaming. I don't know. It seems like the perfect application.
I will say, so I did have an opportunity to try the Apple Vision Pro for an extended period of time. Our buddy Alex from Self-Hosted brought it on his trip to Texas. And so while in Austin, I had an opportunity. And so I compared it, obviously, to my Quest 3. And I'd say the Apple Vision Pro is probably better for work. And sure. The Quest is undeniably better for gaming. And I think the controllers are better for gaming, too. And the Quest is so much cheaper for a really great gaming experience. And I could see Meta says they're maybe going to collaborate with Microsoft on some sort of Xbox-focused one in the future. You know, if Asus has a performance-based ones, I could see those drawing my attention. It seems like that could be a great combination of like designers and game makers and
yeah.
You know, all of that coming together to make something that'd be really good. They still would also, though, have to make the content. And I will say that the content on the Apple Vision Pro, like if you're going for video or novelty content or like the screen pass through, like the stuff there is superior. What is available for the Apple Vision Pro does seem to be superior, where on the Meta Quest, you have a bit more of a hit and miss range of applications and games. There's more there, though.
So my problem is, like, I think you just hit it on the head. The Apple Vision Pro seems more oriented toward work. And as a man who has spent the last 3 to 4 months basically automating people's SharePoint implementations via Alice, I can tell you that most IT budgets are not allocated to the newest, most efficient model. They're allocated to writing some shim to, you know, make the old thing do what you want it to do in some kludgy way.
Well, and the fact that this thing runs Android, you can sideload Android, and they've openly invited Google to publish and bring the Play Store over to Horizon OS.
Well, and think about our former sponsor, friend of the show, the folks over at Path of Titans. I mean, their dinosaur game runs on Android, right? It probably isn't that much of a hassle for them to port it over. And I don't know, I bet there's a lot of kids even who would want to do dinos in VR. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Star Wars games, Disney keeps making them for the Meta platform. Those are really cool, and they're actually pretty affordable. I don't know why Disney makes them so cheap. Also, I don't think the gaming one's probably not going to be more than $1,000, right?
Yeah, I bet. I bet that's the high end of it, right? And you got to assume Meta's...
Right.
Meta's probably going to still produce a headset as well they'll be pushing the envelope in terms of price and capabilities.
Right,
I don't know. The only thing there, though, is it is one of those problems where you're always going to have maybe the first party advantage with Meta because they've been developing the accessories, they've been developing the OS, they'll be developing the hardware. It's kind of like when Microsoft, it's like the opposite but the same with the Surface. If Microsoft had always had the Surface, would we have the huge Dells of the world right now, or would the majority of the sales have always just gone to the Surface hardware? We're starting this Horizon OS adventure with, at least at the moment, Meta, the first party, making the best hardware.
But don't you think it's going to be just like it? Like, remember Panos Panayiotou gave that interview to The Verge a couple years back, where basically Surface was a loss leader where Microsoft did the innovation on Windows and on kind of PC hardware design and just gave it freely, right? They had the little stick that if you want to use our stuff, you can use it for free. But remember you had to offer this, remember the signature PCs? I know I'm going back in time here.
But no, I think you're absolutely right, though. Yeah. And in fact, I would have to imagine Meta is selling it near a loss every one of these headsets.
Yeah, I don't think Meta cares about the hardware because also, they're going to let Google play on the Meta. I guarantee you Meta is going to make a mint on if this takes off as a gaming platform on in-app purchases, on whatever cut they take. I think it is actually like 30%. Just usage and also all that sweet, sweet data.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Face data.
Face data.
You know, but there was a lot of talk about more open App Store ecosystems. Here's what they wrote. They say, we'll give people choice on how to access apps because we don't restrict users to titles from our own App Store. There are multiple ways to access great content on Meta Horizon OS, including popular gaming services like Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. So they're like flexing how they're friendly to cloud streaming gaming companies.
And their deep love of Microsoft.
They also mentioned they have Steam Link in there, so people can play Steam Link.
Oh, that's so good.
And they say, we encourage Google Play 2D app stores to come to Meta Horizon OS, where it can operate with the same economic model it does on other platforms. They're also going to have an API that they call the Open Mixed Reality Framework, so all these headsets and developers can start figuring out AR experiences that use a common API.
I mean, just for Xbox... oh my God, what do they call their service? Xbox?
Game Pass?
Game Pass, thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Alone, this makes a ton of sense. I mean, I bet if I slap this on my kid's face, he would literally become a Minecraft creeper.
Well, it would mean maybe this replaces the Xbox one day.
Well, we had that other story that we didn't put in the show notes, that Microsoft is looking towards a console-agnostic future.
Uh-huh.
I.e., we have lots of Azure and servers with NVIDIA GPUs. We got this.
Yeah, so my son's birthday was recent, and so my dad and I went in and got him an Xbox S, the starter edition, because all his friends are playing on the Xbox now, and he's on the PC and playing by himself, and it's been kind of a lonely experience.
That
and the
sucks,
S comes with 3 months of Game Pass. Because, you know, one of the problems is you buy these things and then you have to buy $60 games. I don't know. I think they got something because he's, you know, at his mom's house, he's got fiber internet. He's got plenty fast internet for game streaming. And I think in some of them, they download the game still anyways and play locally. So you're still running local code.
Yeah. Yeah. So great minds think alike.
They're going to take this away, man.
They're going to take this away. They're going to eat the whole cake. Yeah. No,
uh-huh,
absolutely. My son's birthday is coming up. I also bought him an Xbox S. We did not coordinate on this, folks. And that is his big gift. I don't know how it works, but the person at the store told me you just like put in the Gamecast code and it does it as a sub account. There you go. So
if you figure out that, I would love to know, because right now it seems like you have to have a subscription per person.
No, you have to pay for it, but he'll get the 3 months and then they'll double charge me after.
Microsoft, you know, so they've got essentially they're going to be able to beat Nintendo on shipping super cheap hardware.
The Nintendo, I have to end it after this year. The Nintendo subscription is kind of rough.
Yeah, I know. Microsoft's going to run away with it.
Yeah. Just real quick on the sub accounts. The reason you would do that is his account would be a sub of mine. It makes it so that the parental controls could be on his account, but not mine. Such that, like, because I have a Xbox X and it's a Blu-ray player. But one weird thing about, I believe they still do this, what was the last one? The One 360, something like that?
That was a couple ago, but yeah.
Okay, if you had parental controls, it would look at the rating of the movie. So, like, if it's an R movie, it would actually stop you from watching it without putting in a passcode, which is a pain in the ass. So, also, it will keep him off of, like, private. Like, he can't go into groups with strangers if he's playing, like, Minecraft or Roblox. So, yeah.
Now, I have a strategic question. So, just zooming out and looking at the high-level playboard as we see it right now with Microsoft and Meta and Apple Vision Pro, I want to ask the audience, what do you think the winner is going to be here? Is it going to be the iPhone model where you have a very curated ecosystem with select developers that Apple works with very premium hardware? Or is it going to be the Android Windows model where it's licensed or, in this case, free for third-party OEMs? You know, it's really the classic Windows versus macOS battle all over again. In the phone realm, I think actually the iPhone model proved to be a superior user experience. So I'm wondering what the audience thinks. Send us a boost. Which one is going to be the winner of the Meta or Apple strategies here? Let us know, because I really couldn't say. I could see it going either way. I know which one I think I prefer.
Okay. What's the time scale?
Oh, good question. So let's say the next 5 to 10 years. 5 years? Let's go 5 years.
All right, I'll say five. Am I allowed to answer the question?
Well, I think you should. Well, all right. You could tease
us. We'll
forget. Well, right. People will boost in, and then we'll remember.
I'll answer on the break. Right. So I have a different answer for five than I do for 10. So that's
all
why
right.
I asked.
Yep. Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm.
Ask not what your podcast can boost for you, but what you can boost for your podcast.
Hybrid sarcasm comes in with 50,000 sats.
Hey, rich lobster!
Ice is in episode 563 at 4516. I hear you, my friend. That is a reference to me joking that people were trying to take a guess as to what the baller boost amount would be for that episode. And since people haven't been boosting much, the number was low. Hybrid came in, though, with a solid 50,000 sats to make sure we had a baller. And we appreciate it, Mr. Sarcasm. Jeremy Ross comes in with 31,000 sats.
Coming in hot with the boost.
No message, though, just a boost. Miss Enutech, though, comes in with 20,000 sats.
B-O-O-S-T.
Now, we remember her because she was boosting for her husband who's being deployed. She says, thanks for the shout-out. My husband leaves June 3rd. We're awaiting the birth of our daughter any day now.
Oh.
Wow. A baby arrives, and then dad ships out on June 3rd. How about that?
That's a lot.
I just try to do what I can to contribute to the community. Well, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, and God bless with the kid and everything.
Wow. What a crazy time. I hope it all goes well. And that's gonna be quite the thing. Stay strong and keep us posted. Tampi Trek comes in with 20,000 sats.
Boost!
He writes, I'll refrain from a comment on the current state of Star Trek and Star Wars. Like Obi-Wan, I lament the Empire and long for the days of the Republic. I hope that the talent will somehow someday leak into the current iteration of these franchises that I grew up watching. In the meantime, I'll keep an eye out for good stuff and keep myself busy with the old school JRPGs that I missed as a kid. A line must be drawn here, this far, no farther.
So, I just want to say Luke did reform the Jedi Order, but it was never the same. It's just not going to happen.
Tampa Tech Trekkie, I have started watching Discovery. And I'm just going to leave it at that. But I think you know how I feel about it. I'm just going to say, I don't need to get into it.
You did, in fact, hear and see it, correct, Chris? You didn't, like, mute it and just...
No, I did. I've been watching it. I've been watching it.
I am now on the current season, and I do this not for myself, but for the people.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. Yeah, for the people. Because they want it for some reason, right?
They actually came close to getting good, I feel, in season 4-ish. And then they went, I don't know what happened. Something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know what? We're going to give you guys a couple months, and then we're going to do, because this is the last season, right? So then we're going to do, maybe it'll be a quarterly. So you guys.
We'll see.
Spoilers. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Tampa Tech Trekkie. Appreciate it. Rotted Mood comes in with 10,000 sats.
You're doing a good job.
Value for value with a Vulcan salute. Live long and prosper, Rotted Mood.
Kapla.
Appreciate it. TG at PTC comes in with 5,000 sats and says, the Amazon walkout story is really an AI fail. Seems like the plan from the start was to heavily depend on contractors to take videos, tally grocery bills, and then build data sets. But Amazon couldn't get their machine learning models to converge, and they had to rely on contractors for over half the checkouts, even after years of R&D. This is a major indictment of Amazon's AI abilities and potentially a forewarning about its AI limits in general. Oh, I think you might be right.
Yeah, it's such a dumb application, too. But
you know, they thought they could have the system, like, figure it out.
Well, then they lied about it, right?
Then they would converge on this moment where they didn't use contractors and their AI would take over. And they couldn't. And then, they just kept faking it, hoping they would make it.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, that's, DG, that's a good point. Thank you. Appreciate that. Adversary 17 comes in with 15,000 sats. I don't see a message in here, though. I just see a great amount of support, so thank you, sir.
Muchas really gracias.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Torp comes in with 5,150 sats. I'm making an assumption here, but if both of you can relate to the controls placed on spending finance in a corporation, how would you recommend we expedite a corporate funding of an open source project? Suppose they make heavy use of a project and the developers close to the tool would like to send in some funding. How would they navigate the controls placed on spending to accomplish this? I think it'd be very difficult.
Okay, so I have an idea here because on the week we did a pre-record, I guess last week, right?
Yeah.
I had lunch with somebody who asked me this very question because he is trying to get his employer to throw some money at an open source project. I think, and I don't know if this is going to work, I'll find out in a few weeks, but what I suggested is maybe track your time as though you were billing them as a contractor at whatever a reasonable contracting rate is for, you know, for what you're doing in your region and all that, and say, this is the amount of money, right? The time that using that project has saved you that you would have spent. And then go to them, say, even if you gave a quarter of that, it would make a big impact on the project. You would see an ROI because obviously we're going to you know, we're building our software on this project. And these folks, it's a large framework that basically their entire application is going to run on. So it's not like it's a little thing they're just using for a one-off. And yeah, there you go. Look how much you're saving by using this open source project. Throw them, even if it's 25% of what you would have spent for me to write this.
I like that a lot. One of the things I played with, didn't get too far on it, but was creating like these tiers of criticalness to operations and then assigning a dollar amount to those. So we had, you know, three tiers, and then depending on where the project fell in, that would just sort of be the funding amount. Then the tricky thing is, too, you're going to run into, Torp, is how you actually fund them. So you have to have an accounting department that's probably okay working with something like maybe PayPal for some of them and wiring for others. It's kind of varies depending on their location and country.
Yeah.
That's a great problem, though, to solve. So if you get any progress on it, keep us posted. And if anybody has any ideas for Torp, please boost those in and let us know, because it's a problem worth talking more about. VT52 comes in with 15,000 sets.
Smoke if you got them.
I don't know how to solve FOSS funding, but there should be a way for burned-out maintainers to safely offload projects. Maybe the Free Software Foundation or someone runs a program letting worn-out devs get in touch with trusted entity to have them take ownership of important projects. Maybe they could handle the transfer to the vetted dev. He says, I bet there'd be a pool of folks willing to keep the lights on for some projects.
I'm going to let you touch this one because it's FSF.
You know, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. Like, somehow the FSF would, or some organization would have like a bench of devs that could at least keep the lights on for a bit that would be a pre-vetted source. There's something to that. I think where we would really hit a wall and people would fight is, how do we determine what projects are allowed to request the service? Like, you know, what is their quote-unquote importantness? Seems like that'd be a hard one to solve. And really, I wonder if it'd be as doable as it seems, other than just simply having somebody that's at least taking over the repository and maybe responding to users somewhat, just literally keeping the lights on. I don't know how much further you could go than that. But it's a very interesting idea, I think. I've never considered it.
Yeah, you run the other problem, too, of you would be turning the FSF or whatever organization ends up doing this into a de facto contracting or recruitment shop. And let me tell you, I don't want to name names because I take subcontracting work for some of these firms, but there are companies that solely exist because they have like relationships and people who've worked at like Pricewaterhouse and big, you know, what do they call those management consulting firms that go out and sell software projects, and all they do is farm them out to contractors. That is a multi-million dollar business for them. And I just don't think the FSF in particular would have the capacity, and anybody that did have the capacity to find the caliber of developer you need to maintain some of these more important projects, probably wouldn't do it for free. So,
still though, it's an idea that's, I guess it surprised me. It's just, I'd never really heard anybody float that before. Listener Jeff comes in with 10,000 sets.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
He disagrees with me. He says, change careers in your 30s. I'm trying this right now, and it's just not simple. Consider prior years of service in your current industry and then just throw that away to take a junior or level one position or something new. You won't survive. I can't take a lead position in tech coming from my trades job, and I can't afford to have my salary cut in half. If you have 10 plus years in trade, good luck making that salary a new one. I don't know how I'm going to do it. Yes, it's a bit cynical, but this is what I am finding.
Totes fair. Totally fair. I mean, I'm looking at some options here for kind of spinning Alice out. And yeah, like it's being, you know, past your mid 30s is different than being in your early 20s in terms of your obligations. So,
well, it's incredibly personal. So you know, I know Jeff, I kind of disagree with some of this, but because it's very personal for each, like, you know, if you've got three or four kids, you know, you've got $80,000 in debt or something like that, then yeah, it's a lot harder. There's a lot of, but it is a very complicated thing. I don't mean to make it sound easy.
No, and it becomes hard. Absolutely.
Yeah. We got some good emails in the next episode, though, that address this topic further from a different perspective. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for the boost, Jeff. T-Boy Nabora comes in with 8,777 sats.
Coming in hot with the boost.
They wanted to let us know how they prefer to listen. They say, I like to wait till all the episodes are available, and then I just stream them on my own time. Books are great, though, because you can always tune back in years later when an author releases another one. Either way, though, you can enjoy them on your own. Well, thank you, T-Boy Nabora. Probably getting that way wrong, but I appreciate the boost. Thank you, everybody who boosted in. We have a 2,000 sat cutoff just to keep it short on the air, but we read all of them and keep all of them in our doc. We had 13 total boosters across 16 boosts, and we stacked 191,527 sats, which is fantastic. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much. And here's something for your trouble.
And because it's a special occasion,
Winamp. It really whips the llama's ass.
I think today is Winamp's birthday as we record. It's like 27 years old or something like that right now, which makes me feel old when I say that.
I was going to say, it can't be right, but probably is.
Oh, dang it. I think it made it like 2 or 4 years. You know, it made such an impact. And then it was not very long after its public debut that it actually got bought up by AOL. But yeah, here we are all these years later talking about it. Thank you, everybody who takes the time to boost this individual production. The Boost is an independent, self-hosted way to contribute value back to the show. It's a value-for-value production. That means time, talent, or treasure, whichever way you can contribute back to the show. If you got some value from it, if you enjoyed it, something like that. We appreciate your boost. It's also a great way to get a message on the show and us to read it. I think one of the aces way to do that is with either podverse.fm or Fountain FM. Fountain FM is going from strength to strength with a brand new release that tidies up the UI and makes things even faster. That's shipping out right now. Then you can boost in from there. We appreciate it. The split also goes to our editor, Drew, and supports the podcasting 2.0 community. Mr. Dominic, is there anywhere you'd like to send the good people before we get on and scoot?
Business?
Go to DominicM.com. I posted actually a fun article, Chris, about a pie game for kids last Sunday.
So I love that.
You all might check that out. And Alice.dev, let me automate some stuff for you or move old data. Although if you say you have access, I'm going to do it for you, but then cry when I realize it's the wrong version of access that you said.
They always have access, Mike.
They always have access. Access. That's why when people are like, the splitting edge technology, all businesses can leverage. I'm like, yeah, they're in Excel sheets and access. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's so true. Everybody, go over to coder.show/567. Why? Because there's links over there for the stuff we talked about today, so you can read up more, including we got our contact page over there. We got our live stream. We got the membership link over there. We do this show live on Tuesdays, but we will not be live next week. It's a pre-record for travel, but there will be a regular episode in your RSS feed. Oh, that's at the website, too. Coder.show/RSS. It's real easy. Just put it in any player you like. Preferably 2.0, but yeah, whatever you like. We're just happy you listened. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you back here next week.